listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolling.
And this is State of the Arts.
As always, powered by Breakdown Services, we're delighted to be here. And we have two incredible guests today, one by phone via New York and here in the studio with us. Michael, do you want to tell the listeners who we have today?
Absolutely. Today we have with us one of Broadway's most enduring legends. She is a Tony Award winner for her portrayal of Cassie in the original Company of a Chorus Line. Miss Donna McKechnie will join us live from New York in just a few minutes.
And also in the studio, speaking of lovely and talented, Mr. Scott Lowell is with us, known to many from his work on the television show, Showtime television show, Queer as Folk, but he does quite a number of things. Scott, delighted to have you with us.
Welcome aboard. Happy to be here. Thank you very much.
You have a very sexy voice.
Well, you called me lovely.
Well,
I felt like I needed to live up to that.
Boy, no wonder they loved you on Queer as Folk. With a timbrous voice like
if
that.
If only they wouldn't show my face and just give me my voice. Got a lot
of action.
I think they did that in a few episodes.
That's true.
That's true. Yeah.
That's why I'm on radio. I always said I got a face for radio. So, Michael,
I was going to say, we must acknowledge our good friends down there at Breakdown Services, a global communications network and casting system that provides the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, just visit them at BreakdownExpress.com.
And we'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, who so generously supports our live arts calendar, which will be featured later in today's program. So we're grateful to them. PerformingArtsLive.com. So how was your week there, Sterling?
You know, it was full of a lot of shows over the weekend that I went to see, including the lovely Miss Debbie Reynolds doing her act out here in Los Angeles. And we'll talk about that later in the show. But the heat was the big, the thing on everybody's mind.
It is the surface of the sun out here. We're breaking records.
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah. I mean, I think I told you, my car, and I don't want to go into too much detail about this because it's not especially interesting. But on the thermostat on my car, the temperature shows the temperature outside as you get in. The highest it's ever set, ever, is 109. Like one day, actually early this year, it said 109. I get in the car today, I turn it on, you know what it says? Get out of the car, asshole. What are you, crazy? All on the dashboard. It was unbelievable. I'm not kidding. You wouldn't think all that text could fit
really.
There.
Yet somehow.
Yes.
Somehow it did.
And you know what I find myself thinking about, Michael? And Scott, I don't know, you'll appreciate this because Scott and I first met in Chicago, did a play together in Chicago. When it's this hot in L.A., I immediately think of the coldest it ever was in Chicago. Mm-hmm. I think it's a self-preservation thing.
Yes, but at least there you could always put on more layers. Once it gets this hot, like unless you're going to shed your skin, I don't know where you go.
I was walking to the train. I told Michael this story earlier. I was walking to the train the last winter I was in Chicago, and I was walking to the train, and the wind chill was like a million below. And I was halfway to the train. My right eye freezes shut. It's a Southport L. I'm walking down the street. My right eye freezes shut, and I'm standing there like Popeye, like, okay, this is too cold for civilized people. So I go into a little 7-Eleven, and the guy's like, can I help you? And just thawing, thanks. And the other thing, too, and tell me if this happened to you, Michael, you spent a lot of time in Chicago, too. There's a phenomenon that happens when it's that cold, and that is, I call it bus or cab mirage. Which is when the wind chill is 40 below, everything coming down the street looks like a cab.
Yes.
That could be a cab. It's a guy on a bike.
It's a cat.
It's a cat. He could take me somewhere. I could ride with him.
Well, you know, and speaking of cabs, now this didn't happen in Chicago, but it happened in New York. And not to me, but a friend of mine, an actor friend of mine, Michael Greer. I don't know whether you remember him from many, many years ago. Mm-hmm. But he had just come out of a Broadway show. And it was snowing. And, of course, to try and get a cab, right, in the snow. And he got lucky. And one came and stopped right in front of the theater. Everyone's coming out of the theater. And he opened the door. And as he's opening the door, this woman shoots by him and into the cab and turns around and looks at him and says, for me. And it was Ethel Merman.
Ethel Merman?
Ethel Merman.
You made that up.
I did not make that up.
You sure it wasn't Ernest Borgnine? Because a lot of people confuse
those two mixed up. Now, is that nice about... I mean, that really will hurt the feelings of Mr.
Ernest Borgnine. Hello.
Thank you. Good night, everybody.
You know, and speaking of New York, I must tell this other story, too. This is a true story that happened to me. And I'm in New York, and it's the dead of winter, and I'm going to... I was there with the Bee Gees, and we were in concert. We were touring the country. And
not in the biblical sense. He was actually working for the band.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, in New York, of course, everybody goes out late. You don't start your night until quite late. Mm-hmm. And it was a very trendy club. I went, you know, after the show and was meeting people there, and there was a line to get in. So I stood in that line for about 30 minutes before I got in, and I was so... freezing cold, but by the time I got in, and then it was, you know, sardines. It was just packed. You couldn't move. Uh-huh. But I make my way to the bar, and I'm trying to thaw out and trying to be cool at the same time, you know. And there's multimedia happening in this club everywhere, including live people on trapezes. Yes? I'm standing at the bar. I'm trying to get the attention of the bartender. And one of the trapeze artists swings by me, whose feet, with shoes on, hits me on the side of the face and knocks me for a loop. But in my own inimitable way, I pretended like it never happened.
Yes.
And the bartender at that moment said, "And what can I get you?" And I said, "A gin and tonic."
But you were always cool.
Always cool.
And a lot of people don't know this, but that trapeze artist was Donna McKechnie. Yes.
It all comes full circle.
And I'm so glad that she's here, Suze, and I believe that she's on the phone right now. Ms. McKechnie, are you with us?
I'm here. Yes, please call me Donna.
Oh, okay, Donna. I can't tell you how excited I am to talk to you. Michael, I know, knows you better than I, and you were actually doing a play at a theater out here the same time we were doing a production in the neighboring theater. You were doing The Girls' Room.
At the El Portal.
Yeah, yeah, and we were in the studio space at the same time, so I never got to see it there, but we had Carol Lawrence on as our first guest, and she spoke very highly of you and said the experience was just wonderful. And
I love Carol, we're doing it again. The script has been rewritten, and we're doing a reading next week, actually, for some producers.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So. I'm keep my fingers crossed. But anyway, it's great to be with you finally.
Finally, yes.
And I'm hearing like every other word because there's a torrential rain in New York.
Oh my gosh.
Right now.
So it's raining there.
So I may have to go under the door frame, I'm waiting for an earthquake or
something. This is like biblical, because you have torrential rain there, and we're on the surface of the sun here. The next thing is going to be locusts,
right.
I think. Locusts are next, or frogs from the sky, maybe.
I love that story. I got it kind of about the Chicago. I thought I was in the coldest winter in Chicago in 1981. They had ropes on Michigan Avenue. You had to hold on to the rope.
Oh, yes, because the wind would take you down.
Slide away on the ice.
Yeah. Oh, wow. No, my wife is from Chicago, and she remembers the blizzard of 67. And that was the one where they didn't know it was really going to hit as hard as it hit. So everyone was already at work, and then it hit while everyone was at work. That Lakeshore Drive was littered with cars for 5 days.
Oh,
wow.
It was
just unbelievable. Yeah. But, Donna, before Michael... asks you some questions, because he's so much more versed at this than I am. I have to tell you a fun story very briefly about the first time that I found out who Donna McKechnie was, because I was I lived in Connecticut before I moved to Chicago and then out to L.A., so I actually saw you in the first cast, obviously, of Chorus Line, for which you won the Tony mm-hmm. Award, and I hadn't attended the show yet, but in my high school class... We were going around the classroom asking people what they wanted to be when they grew up. And one of the women in my class, her answer was, "I want to be Donna McKechnie."
Oh, wow.
Because she had just seen Chorus Line a few weeks earlier, and then I saw it a few months after that, and it was just so wonderfully memorable, and it's just really just an iconic performance. And I know you're asked to talk about it a lot, but I can't imagine that you're too sick of it.
No, I'm very proud of the show.
Mm. Well,
it's played
for...
in over 25 countries. It's still on somewhere. It's always playing somewhere.
Wow. That's amazing. And Donna, for me, I saw you. I think I told you this on the telephone when we first spoke about you coming on State of the Arts. I saw you with Lola Falana. I was on tour with Lola Falana, and this was early on, right after A Chorus Line opened, and we saw you in New York. And from that moment on, I must admit, I have been in love with you ever since.
Wow.
Yeah,
well,
seriously.
That's great.
Huge
I had no
crush,
idea.
Huge crush on you.
That's great.
So it was a mesmerizing evening, to say the least. And
thank you.
I was just reading today a little bit of background about the show itself, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the literature that I was reading said that A Chorus Line remains the fourth longest-running show on Broadway produced in America. So I guess there's a difference.
Well, I don't know if that's true anymore, but at one point it certainly was, because it closed in 1991. And I think Cat surpassed it, or there might have been another show, but... You know, who's counting, really?
Right, but those,
Monday. Like I say, it's always playing somewhere. In fact, I'm doing, you know, I do my concert show that I take all over the country. I just came back from Australia, and everywhere I go, like I'm going to South Bend, Indiana next month, and there's a Chorus Line opening in the theater right next door, so I'm going to go see the show and talk to the kids, because they are kids.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And it's always a thrill, you know? It's always a thrill to see it. And it's like two generations later.
And what a thrill for them to get to meet you and have you make any sort of comments about the show. Wow.
And so fantastic. And so timely and so, interestingly enough, so undated. You know, you could do Chorus Line right now with those themes and the struggle of the performers and all that. That's a constant.
That doesn't
you know, it doesn't hinge
it's
on
fundamentally,
the...
Yeah, it's saying that we're all there's something for everyone and we're all fundamentally the same, aren't we? So
right.
It touches that personal chord.
Well, Donna, you recently appeared you were featured in the documentary film Every Little Step, which had a theatrical release last year, I believe.
Yeah, I thought I was so proud. I thought the filmmakers did such a great job with that film, because there was no script. You know, they just had hours and hours and hours of film that they edited and created this very suspenseful, moving, funny, touching slice of life, you know?
Wow. Well, I haven't seen it, but
I got so many nice awards, you know. So, you know, it was, yeah, those are the things you never, you know, that you don't search for, that when they happen and you see the talent around and how people still respond to that, it's very heartwarming.
You know, Paul and I meet every Monday, Donna, right before the show, and we talk about exactly, you know, the rundown and what we're going to be speaking about. And one thing that I made a comment on, I don't know whether this is 100% accurate, but your Music in the Mirror in A Chorus Line, was that not the longest single performance in the content of the show?
Yes, I believe so. I mean, it was like running a mile every night, I know that. I mean, it was like 7 minutes or something, but I think it was. Yeah.
So to sing,
I mean, there
and
are
dance
and ensemble numbers that, yeah.
And act it amazing.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, it's a showstopper, obviously, but you don't really think in terms of, you know, there's some showstopper numbers in musicals that are not necessarily the longest, but you just remember that. It's just like everything. I mean, and I don't say it like that it affects the rhythm of the play of the piece in a negative way, but the show literally stops, and that piece, that self-contained piece, just sort of happens, and you just sort of have to recover, you know, after that
right.
one.
Well, it is, yeah, it's Michael Bennett's, you know, genius to frame everything, every number, it builds to that point. I'm very, you know, I was always felt that honor, you know, that he would frame it in such a way that there would be the story connecting and there would be such an incredible payoff. And it is long. I do it now in my show, and I do it in concert. Of course, it's the concert version. It's sometimes I have a space 4x4, so I call it the dance illusion version, you know.
Well, maybe you could employ some of the trapeze artists that Michael had mentioned, and then you just swing out over the
crowd.
That
would help.
Speaking of that, though, Donna, do tell us about the cabaret act that you have put together. is My Musical Comedy Life. Is that the one?
Yes, okay. Right. Yeah, I tried it out last October in London, and my out-of-town tryout. And then I took it to Australia for a month, my first trip, and I loved it. It's kind of a hybrid, because I'm, a theater animal, so cabaret in the old style is not what I do. I'm not a chanteuse, but I'm a theater person. I'm a dancer, a singer. So I tell stories, and I call it My Musical Comedy Life, and it's just great. I took it to Australia for in June and went to Adelaide to open the cabaret festival, and then Melbourne and then Sydney. And it is more theatrical way, I guess, by telling the stories on my life, So, and I also kind of structured it. I wrote a book a couple years ago called Time Steps, My Musical Comedy Life, which is more a cautionary tale, because when I teach acting, I like to let, the younger actors know that it's not a charmed life. And
sure,
so I was able to put a lot of that into the book. But it's all music, my show. It's all underscored, and I really enjoy the songs. In fact, I'm going to sing next week in a concert with Marvin Hamlisch. And he's actually, this is a rare experience for me, because it rarely happens, where where he's actually going to play for me in a concert. We're doing a benefit for the Actors Fund. So I'm very excited about that. Just working with him again is thrilling for me.
Oh, sure.
Well, you've done so many other things in New York, of course, and your Broadway credits include How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, the national tour, The Education of Hyman Kaplan, Sondheim, a musical tribute, which you also choreographed, On the Town, Promises, Company, State Fair, for which you received the Fred Astaire Award for Best Female Dancer for the 1996 season, and in London. Now, let me ask you something. By comparison to Broadway, how does London compare?
Well, I love London. I mean, that's their theater, their tradition, It's very different. I mean, the Americans really brought a whole... When I went over the first time in 1969, they had never seen... I went over with Promises, and they had never seen dancing like this. And so I was there in that at that time when we brought our American musical theater as an art form to the London stage, which is steeped in their own great history of theater.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been wonderful to be able to go back and forth and go over there, quite a few times and do shows there and do English productions and do American productions. We did Company over there when Hal Prince took the whole Broadway show. That was a very thrilling time. So over the years, I've really developed a great friendship with, so many people there, and it's like a second home to me. Of course, it's always best to work when you travel. So.
That's interesting, though, Donna. You just made an interesting point that never really occurred to me, and that is that the musical theater, musical comedy theater, it's a distinctly American animal. It really is. It's sort of
absolutely
like blues and jazz. It's something that we're mostly responsible. Now, obviously, the British had music hall comedy, which was really more just sort of like our vaudeville.
Exactly. And so there's been of late, there's been a great give and take. I mean, I just saw two plays that are of a British ensemble coming over, and I believe in the fair exchange, of course, but, so that's exciting. They have things to show us, and we certainly have things to show them, and that's been for the artists, it's been exhilarating to be able to work there and other countries.
And what a great ambassador we have in you, too. So we're very, very grateful
to
have you there. That's
absolutely. And, we had the pleasure of having Donna McKechnie in Los Angeles 2 years ago, 3 years ago, Donna? Two or three. You were choreographing Guys and Dolls.
Two
years ago, Guys and Dolls. You were
Guys and Dolls. That was one of the most thrilling experiences of my whole life,
At the Hollywood Bowl, no less.
The Hollywood Bowl. Oh, I just... And the cast. I mean, everybody. It was just a... Very fast, they do it in like 2 weeks. But
exactly. That's how we do things in LA, They just say,
I
show
I
for rehearsals and say, go.
Yeah, everyone has said that. Everyone who has worked at the Hollywood Bowl, they say that it was a joyous experience, but they all follow it up with, oh, yeah, but it was a complete, you know, panic, last-minute scramble because of how tight they schedule things over there. I mean, you said that was the case.
And to be on the other side of it, you know, to see, to want to make, do everything I can to help the actors, you know, because I'm at a different vantage point sitting out watching. And then to see all those great actors and dancers rise to the occasion after very little rehearsal, it just it made me so proud to be in this business. I tell you, sometimes it's, you know, I go, you know, who do I have to you-know-what to get out? But I'm sorry. But
it's okay. It's
true.
The internet.
You know,
you're
every year I want to quit, and I go, I can't type. What am I going to do? But I'm so proud of the community and doing the Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. We did a big big fair, and the tables are all set up at Schubert Alley, and everyone is volunteering their time and signing, you know, raising money and signing autographs and having their picture taken. And I just, you know, I just feel very grateful, and I'm proud of this.
We're particularly fond of that organization. We give a portion of our proceeds from our sponsorships here at State of the Arts to Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS, and we had the pleasure of having Tom Viola on early on in our airing of this program.
He was like our third guest, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. Right. We had him on right.
Wow, a wonderful man. Wonderful.
Yeah, I think it was the day after he won the Tony Award. Yes, it was. The day after he was given the Tony Award for his work in that community. So, awesome. Donna, there's something that we do out here in Los Angeles on State of the Arts, and we initiate every guest by asking them, Paula, I'm going to let you ask her this. It's just a little something that puts you into our roster of celebrities.
Oh, I do want to ask her that, but before I ask her that, I just want to make sure that we get this covered so that people know. Donna, do you have a website where people can go to check on the process and where your appearances are? Can we give that out?
Oh, yes, I do, because I'm going to be out there in Santa Fe with Lillian Montevecchi and Kay Ballard, and I want everyone to drive from Los Angeles to see us. It's December 4th.
Okay.
It's called From Broadway with Love. Yeah, and my website, and it hasn't been put up there yet, but it's DonnaMcKechnie.com.
DonnaMcKechnie.com. Okay.
And what Donna's referring to is a benefit for Animal Protection of New Mexico. And the evening...
That's right.
The evening is at Santa Fe's historic Lenzic Theater, and also stars with Donna, former Prima Ballerina and Tony Award winner Lillian Montevecchi.
Montevecchi, right.
You just said that. And from the Broadway musicals Nine and Grand Hotel, and musical theater and television star, comedian, and singer Kay Ballard.
Kay Ballard. Wow. Yeah.
So for tickets, ladies and gentlemen, to go see Donna in concert with these wonderful women, call 505-988-1234. I'll say that again, 505, area code 988-1234.
Oh, thank you, Michael, and I'm sorry that I interrupted what you were saying.
No, it's not the only thing that we should be plugging to. Donna's cabaret act, My Musical Comedy Life, at the Laurie Beachman Theater within the West Bank Cafe will take place on November 3rd.
And I love that space. I did my show at the Laurie Beachman Theater. Yes, I love that little venue. It reminds me of your place.
Yeah, great.
And for reservations for Donna in concert at the Laurie Beachman Theater, call 212-695-6909. Again, 212-695-6909. Okay, Paul.
Okay, Donna. This is what Michael was alluding to earlier, and that is we ask all of our guests on the show to share their most memorable, their either worst or most embarrassing moment on stage. The worst thing to ever happen to you on stage, the one that really sticks in your brain as far as being the one that is the mortifying moment of the ages. Do you have any tales you could share with us?
I have. Oh God, it's too embarrassing to talk about, though. Do I have to?
It's totally up to you. And remember, we're the internet, so there's no FCC to worry about.
Oh gosh. Well, no. I'm a lucky girl. I've worked with such professional people, and you know, and I worked in a day also when I was coming up on Broadway shows that you had more than 2 weeks of rehearsal, so everybody did their job. But sometimes, you know, shortcuts are made and things get, you know, a little out of hand. So I've had really great experiences, some wonderful experiences, but there's two things I have to tell you. What, the first one, I was doing this play, and it was like an off-Broadway play, and we had no chance to, you know, check our props or everything. And I played this waitress, and I came out, and I have a slip on. I'm supposed to do the scene, this big dramatic scene, changing my costume, putting the dress over my head, and I took the wrong dress. I was a size 8, and I took a size 4. And I started doing this big dramatic scene, and I pulled it over my shoulders and my head, and I couldn't get it over my head. And I kept struggling and kept doing the scene, so you can imagine, you know. The audience started giggling, and then they started laughing, and then the more I struggled, the more they laughed, and it was like, it was a comedy now, it wasn't, you know. So that was mortifying. That was mortifying. Nothing compares to that. The other time, I was doing my show, I got my act up, and I was playing to, you know, European, I was in London, and I was, you know, having a good time. The audience was great. And in the middle of this, my 11 o'clock number, before I start this number, I'm talking to the audience, there's a man in the front who had too many martinis. He got up on the stage, lifted his glass, and said, "This is the greatest show I've ever seen." And I said, "Sir, you don't have lines here. You must sit down because it's not over." And that
I work alone.
I never... yeah, I work alone, so all those lines came back to me, but that was a unique experience. That never happened before or since.
Well, look at it this way. At least you didn't come up on the stage with a martini when you had a dress over your head. So consider yourself lucky in that regard.
Donna McKechnie, we cannot thank you enough for joining us. You are always an elegant woman, and we hope that you'll come back and spend some more time with
Michael.
Us in the future.
Thank you, Paul.
Oh, pleasure meeting you over the phone.
Right.
And thank you so
Take
much,
care.
Donna. Bye now. Thank you.
You as well.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. That was wonderful to have her. Wonderful. So we're going to chat with Scott Lowell very shortly, right after we do our live arts calendar presented by Performing Arts Live. Michael, would you like me to kick that off?
Yes, please do, Paul.
I'd be more than happy to. Darren Lemming is the star center fielder for the champion New York Empires, an extraordinary athlete. He fills both his fans and his teammates with awe at his abilities and his presence on the field and off. When he makes the matter-of-fact announcement that he's gay, he brings to the fore the confused and twisted hostilities of his teammates. Now through November 21st at Hollywood's Distinguished Celebration Theater, don't miss the 2003 Tony Award-winning production of playwright Richard Greenberg's Take Me Out.
And direct from its U.S. premiere in San Francisco, a spectacular new stage production of J.M. Barrie's classic story, Peter Pan, will be presented on the grounds of the Orange County Performing Arts Center in Costa Mesa, California, in a state-of-the-art 1,350-seat tented theater pavilion beginning tomorrow, September 28th through November 21st. Conceived by an award-winning creative team, the show features 22 actors, stunning puppets, epic music, and dazzling flying sequences surrounded by breathtaking video. This production of Peter Pan was not only a smash hit when it launched in London last year, but it became the world's first 360-degree video projection for live theater and flies both cast and audience over Edwardian London.
Wow. Yep. I saw, actually, an ill-fated production of Peter Pan.
You
did.
It
wasn't as good. And I think it was the star. I don't think it was the wisest choice for Peter Pan, but maybe that's just me.
Who was that?
It was Bruce Valanche.
Oh, well, there you go.
For further information about any productions and or events mentioned in today's State of the Arts Live calendar,
should have been playing.
Visit us during the week at stateoftheartsla.com. We also suggest you drop in at performingartslive.com, where you could search for Southern California events in several different categories happening every day of the week. So that is our live arts calendar. Our next... Michael, before we actually start talking to Scott, you wanted to say something about the shows that you saw or had this weekend?
I do, indeed. I had the pleasure of going to the El Portal Theater, the historic El Portal Theater, this past Friday for a very special performance. It was a gala benefit for the Thalians, and the Thalians is a group of that was established some years ago, which is established composed of many celebrities, mostly female celebrities, for funding money to provide assistance to mental health. Okay. And they have actually, through their fundraising efforts, have created a division at Cedars-Sinai called the Thalians Mental Health Center. And it is going strong. And these women are relentless, Debbie Reynolds being one of them. So that's what Friday night was all about. And in the audience, get this, guys, in the audience, Connie Stevens, Mitzi Gaynor, Lainey Kazan, Nigel Lithgow from American Idol, the executive producer of American Idol, and his beautiful wife, and Stephanie Powers, if I didn't mention Stephanie, and Anna Maria Albaghetti, Fritz Coleman, Carol Connors, the songwriter, the two-time Oscar-nominated songwriter, and the list goes on and on. Abby Dalton, Richard Hurd, Marjorie Lord from Make Room for Daddy.
Yeah, yeah.
If you remember these people, Paul, I know you're very young.
Yeah.
And
Bruce Vilanch, obviously.
Bruce Vilanch.
Bruce was there. Yes.
Flew in. To
flew
see the
in.
Show.
Yeah.
And
well,
so
the
many
chains
others.
Kept breaking.
But
yeah.
I must say that it was so wonderful. I sat there watching this woman who is 78 years old doing her nightclub acts,
yeah.
looking like she's 50 and sounding just as good as she's always sounded. And I had a smile plastered on my face for 90 minutes just watching this woman go through, you know, the material that she has, this wealth of material, and this extraordinary use of film clips showing her career. From the very first film she ever made for Warner Brothers to On to the Metro Years and Singing in the Rain and, oh, my God. And, you know, Debbie has a museum, actually, here in North Hollywood, one of the world's largest collection of movie memorabilia.
Oh, her own personal collection?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
And
I didn't know
it
that.
Was also, she used to have a hotel in Las Vegas where she had it housed there. But what she's done with this footage is bring it back to perfect, you know, picture. And it's brilliant to see the usage of it in the show.
Oh, wow.
And she dances, and she's telling the jokes, and she does impressions, and she closed the first act with her impression of Barbara Streisand, and I must say she gave Barbara quite a run for her money. And I'm serious about that. It was hilarious, you know, but she did it in the true spirit of you know, impressions. And it was a must-see, and it is playing at the El Portal Theater.
She's done a number of shows there. That's like her home base.
It's an annual. Well, yeah. When she was a little girl, she, you know, she was from Burbank, so she used to ride her bicycle to that theater when it was a movie theater and see the movies. She'd pay 10 cents, as she says in her act, on a Sunday, and she'd stay there all day and see the same movie over and over again.
And you know who used to work box office over there?
Who was that?
Cher.
Really?
Yeah, I read that somewhere. I think I'm correct on that. I think that Cher mentioned in print somewhere that she used to be a ticket taker at the El Portal Theater. I don't know if it's true or not, but I mean, why would I make something like that up?
Why would you?
I don't know.
Well, she is there until October 3rd, ladies and gentlemen, and I urge you to go see this woman. We don't know if she'll be playing the El Portal next year or where she'll be next here in Los Angeles, but all you have to do is call 818-508-4200 or order online at elportaltheater.com, and that's theater with an R-E at the end of the spelling of that word. So that was my Friday night out.
Okay.
Then I went to the Los Angeles Music Center and saw a production we'll talk about after you see it this coming week.
Oh, yes, Leap of Faith, yes.
With Brooke Shields and the amazing Raul Esparza.
Yeah. Who you look a little like, Raul. Scott, did anyone ever tell you that?
Well, he modeled himself after me.
Is that it?
Yeah,
after
we had done some shows in Chicago, and he decided it would be helpful to his career if he looked,
if he looked more like you.
Funny how it works that way, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we choose our role models. And then at Sterling's Upstairs, I have to say this, last night, Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's, my nightclub out here in Studio City, we had the we produce an annual competition for the Broadway community here, which is called LA's Next Great Stage Star. And it's literally that. It's finding LA's Next Great Stage Star. And we have young ones that come in, you know, in the 18 to 28 category, and hundreds of them come in to audition, yet only 18 are chosen to compete, very American Idol-like in its foundation, but it is patterned after an audition. Hmm. No eliminations for us, 6 weeks of this, and the last night is the finale and the eliminations. Hmm. And the top five are chosen, and all of our top five, and more, really beyond that, go on and have professional careers. Hmm. You know, literally the next day. The agent judges, 15 judges judges, the elite of L.A. theater. And this young lady, Taylor Tracy, came in last night, and with her show, You're Gonna Hear From Me, 19 years old, took the roof off the top of the place, and a brilliant singer, beautiful young woman, and had such command at 19 for bringing in an hour show of her own. So, Taylor Tracy, if you're listening, congratulations. You worked very hard, and it certainly showed. So
yeah, you said it was great.
You've got a long career ahead of you in that area, as well as musical theater. Well, we have a lovely man sitting here, as Paul said earlier, in the studio.
Yes, yes. Now, Mr. Scott Lowell is with us. And, Scott, I know you and I could probably shoot the you-know-what for hours. So because of that, and because I know we'll go off on tangents, I want to get this information about the production that you're doing right off the... out of the shoot here, The Blithe Spirit at A Noise Within, which is what Scott's current project, which you said you go into tech tomorrow, right?
We start tech rehearsals tomorrow and start previews on Saturday, the 2nd.
Yes.
Noise Within begins previews October 2nd, yes, as you said, and opens October 9th. Performances continue through December 17th, 2010. A Noise Within is located at 234 South Brand Boulevard in beautiful Glendale, California. And to purchase tickets or for a full season brochure, call 818-240-0910, extension 1. That's 818-240-0910, extension 1. Or visit www.anoisewithin.org. Remember, that's a .org and not a .com. So, how are you, Scott?
I'm well, and we should say, mention that you heard about it here, and they will give you a full-price ticket.
They will give you a full price ticket?
Yes, if you
usually
if you
they charge people
order.
Double if they
yes. yeah, exactly.
On State of the Arts. Yeah, actually normally they charge more.
Exactly. Yeah.
They said you listen to those guys?
Yes.
No, we're
charging. If you're spending that much time on the internet,
there's a surtax.
You're gonna pay for it.
Yeah,
yes.
You're paying for porn, you can pay for this.
Speaking of porn, so
yes,
queer as folk, tell me about
yeah. What a lovely lead in.
Just
well, we all know
I just
you.
Lob those
we
things up for you.
How many? How many years were you on that show?
We did 5 years.
You did five years.
Did five seasons of Queer as Folk.
Wow.
Up in Toronto, and
did you live in Toronto that whole time, or did you go back and forth?
We ended up going back and forth a little bit. The first 2 years, we were up there 8 or 9 months out of the year, so
right.
We were pretty much living there. And then by the third season, we'd figure things out, and we were up there 6 months there, and then we get to come back here for 6 months, but we'd be always up there for the worst months, and you know, all throughout winter we'd be up in Toronto, and then we'd get to come down here for being on the surface of the sun like it is now.
Now, when you say down here, so you're from Los Angeles?
I got cast in the show from Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I'm originally very much like I just follow
Chicago.
Paul Strolley around. I grew up in Connecticut.
We all have to.
Exactly. Yeah. I know. He leaves such a large wake in his. I moved to Chicago right after college and was there about 11 years, and then I moved here in 98 and got the series in 2000, and so then I was back and forth for 5 years, and now I've been back full-time for about 5 years now.
What are the chances of an actor moving to L.A. and spending 2 years here and then getting a series for five
well,
years?
Well, especially when I had, you know, I left Chicago to get away from winter, and I got two good winters here, and then I got shipped up to Toronto,
yes.
Which I love.
The good news is you got a series. The
yes,
bad news
exactly.
is it's in Iceland.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, what a provocative and controversial and yet groundbreaking series that was. I mean, and with an incredible cast of actors.
Cast of actors. We were very lucky. And, you know, I've said in other places as well, too, it's oddly enough, it was a very theatrical kind of experience. The creators of the show, Dan Lippman and Ron Cowan, were both theater guys. Almost every actor in the show, the main ensemble, came from a theater background, and especially in the first season of the show, we kind of it felt like doing a very, very long naked play. And you know, it was very collaborative and very ensemble oriented, and it felt very comfortable going into it for all of us, and kind of continued that way. And I think we were lucky shooting it up in Toronto in that it formed this kind of protective bubble over us that I don't know if we would have gotten had we shot it down here and forced us all to really bond and become family and with the things we were asked to do on the show we needed that.
I would imagine
feeling
so,
of security.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So are you still friends with? Do you still correspond with the people from the show?
Oh yeah, I see them all regularly. We have poker games at my house.
Are a lot of them here?
A bunch of them are here.
Yeah, Gail is here, right?
Gail is here. Peter Page, Michelle Clooney. The creators of our show, Dan and Ron, are here. Robert Gant is here. Taya Gill, who was the lone Canadian in our cast, she's in the process of moving down here. So really only Randy Harrison, who played Justin, lives in New York. And then Sharon Gless is more often than not down in Miami where she lives and then shoots Burn Notice down there now. But she still has her her little cottage in Studio City that she bought when she was a contract player at Universal, and she still comes and spends a lot of time there, too.
She's a very resilient woman, you know, she, a resilient actress,
oh,
isn't
yeah.
she?
Yeah.
She's something else.
Extraordinary.
I love her, actually.
We call her the Dame.
Yeah.
Dame
yes.
Sharon Glass.
I saw that on your Facebook page.
She really
the Dame,
is.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's an extraordinary woman and
just regal.
Dear friend.
Just regal.
Very regal.
You know, just, yeah.
And very genuine and just so loving with everybody. And, you know, she, in doing, and oddly enough, she was in Chicago working on a show when the audition for Queer as Folk came about, and someone got her the script, and the part that she ended up playing was a very small part in the pilot, but she really took to it. She kind of came up with her own costume for the character, flew herself out to, you know, this multi-Emmy award-winning actress, and she came out and she said, no, I want you guys to see me for this part, and really fought to do it. I mean, she wanted to do this show. She, as she always said, she smelled trouble. And she wanted to be a part of it. And, you know, the way she, you know, she's kind of become the P-flag mother that I think everybody in the gay community wishes they've had. And she's just embraced that role and continues to love having that effect on the community. And she's, yeah, wonderful, wonderful.
Well, you know, of all the characters I think that were created on that show, I don't know if you agree, Paul, but I think your character actually underwent the most amazing changes through those 5 years. Everyone else was kind of on the same,
yeah,
you know, level of, but your twists and turns were,
yeah, they were
all
pretty
over
extreme.
The place. Yeah,
yeah. They, I mean, I think they, you know, Peter Page and I were kind of seen as being the comic relief on the show, is how we were initially conceived, and we were lucky enough for the writers and the producers to see that we could kind of take anything they threw at us, for better or for worse. And so anything extraordinary they needed to have happen, they kind of had happen to one of us. And I'm very grateful they entrusted us with that as well. And, yeah, I mean, to have gone from just like a nerdy accountant to a crystal meth queen getting gang raped in a basement somewhere, it's like, it's a pretty large character arc.
That's another day at the office.
I mean, again,
it's a journey.
Paul Strolley's lived this life already. So
well, you know, as you said, Scott always follows me wherever I go. You know,
that's exactly a methamphetamine
house.
But, you know, beyond Queer as Folk, you've done so many other things on television, mm-hmm, and from The Defenders and Heroes on NBC, Leverage, TNT, Criminal Minds, and various voices on the Fox animated series American Dad.
Yes, yes, and actually the Defenders episode that I did, which they just premiered last week and had some great ratings, so hopefully it's going to do well. My episode, I think, airs October 6th, the first guest spot I did with them, and hopefully might be a character they bring back, because it was a lot of fun to do. I work with Jerry O'Connell, and just a sweet guy. So
mark your calendars, October 6th?
October 6th, I think it'll be 9 o'clock.
But also you have, and the listener should obviously take that date down, but also you have an incredibly well-executed website, I thought. I went to your website.
You.
It's scottlowell.com.
Exactly.
And it's two T's and two L's.
Yes.
Yeah, scottlowell.com. And it was really well, you know, well put together. I was happy to see you mention the state of the arts thing there.
Absolutely,
so we were there.
Absolutely.
I don't think you really needed to post that picture of me.
That's the only one I have.
With the donkey.
That's the only one I have.
You know,
why would I need any other?
Oh, that picture.
That picture. Yes.
Good God.
Yeah, I tell you, you're gonna have traffic at that site. Now.
Well, you don't often see a donkey smiling.
Well, that's my aunt. So, Scott, what is your,
yes,
before we wrap it up, we don't have a lot of time left, but
yes,
what is your nightmare on stage story? You have to have one.
I do.
Because I
many.
Know when I cracked you up on stage.
Yes,
it was
you caused me trouble.
We were doing
Laughter
on the 23rd floor at the Briar Street Theater in Chicago, and Scott, I don't think at that point, knew that I was also from back east.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a late night commercial, like a dime, like a commercial that ran for about 30 years with the same thing, and it was for Puppy City.
Mm-hmm.
Puppy City at Ocean Avenue and Avenue U in Brooklyn, and their tagline was free house-breaking wee-wee pets with every purchase.
Free house-breaking wee-wee
pets. Wee-wee pets. Puppy City at Ocean Avenue and Avenue U in Brooklyn. Free house-breaking wee-wee pets with every purchase. So there was a moment in the show where Scott and I, it's a Neil Simon play, and it's about the Sid
Caesar. The writer's room at Sid Caesar.
And that we had a hubbub moment, a peas and carrots moment, you know, one of those things where you're
right,
just like, you know. And I just turned to Scott, and I looked at him, and I just said, free housebreaking wee-wee pads with every purchase. He had to leave the stage. He had to turn around, and he walked off the stage.
Well, he's even turning red now, so,
I loved it.
Now, I don't expect that to be your worst, but what was your...
No. I was thinking, hearing Donna's stories, which are great, and, I think, there's many, but my favorite, I have to go back to sixth grade. All the way back to sixth grade, and I was emceeing a talent show at our school because I was such a nerd. And
Were you a nerd?
Oh, I was. Oh, yeah. Still, was and still am. And I.
What's this?
There's no past tense, Michael.
God, I'm sitting with two of them.
Exactly. This is how we breed them in Connecticut, and then they ship us to Chicago, and then we go out to L.A. It's all the nerds. We march across the country. I was hosting it, and I was doing it as Groucho Marx. obvious choice. And I wrote the whole thing. I had some old books of Groucho Marx one-liners or some Milton Berle book of insults or something that I had for little zingers. And the thing I came up with, I had my friend Timmy Litton, was kind of like those two guys in the Muppet, Wallace and
the old guys
in the balcony. I built a fake balcony. It was basically him standing on a desk with a piece of cardboard around him, and we put some an old mustache on him and a bad wig, and he was one of those guys. And so he would heckle me all the time from the audience while I'd be doing my introductions, and then I'd zing him with a little one-liner. And the big finale I came up with was that I would go backstage and I would curl myself up and get into a little box that somebody would close me up in and then wheel me out on a hand truck and they'd come out.
Are we talking about Queer as Folk?
That was the fifth season. And I can't remember Timmy's character name, but the person would come out and say, package for Mr. So-and-so, package for Mr. So-and-so. And he'd go, what's going on down there? And he'd come down to the stage and open up the package, and I'd pop out with a magic marker and draw a mustache on his face. Very Bugs Bunny, and kind of do the thing with the cigar and roll my eyes. And, big finish. It just, dying into applause. So we had to do two shows, one for the first through fourth grade, and then another show for the fifth and sixth graders. And we did the fifth and sixth graders first, and then we did the first through fourth graders. And the first show, great, I'll smash it. Second show, doing it, I just remember I was drinking a lot of water. I was trying to stay. I knew the importance of staying hydrated even back then, but I hadn't quite reached that stage in my life of figuring out when you should go to the bathroom or not, when you reach, it's like, I've got time. Well, I had had so much water, and I had to be in that box all curled up for quite a long time, and I just couldn't hold it any longer, and I peed my pants, and now I'm stuck in this box that I have to pop out of on stage, and I'm wearing gray flannel pants.
A light gray.
Oh. Except for a portion of it, which became suddenly very dark gray. The dread. And there's nothing. What can I do? I got to end the show. Yeah. So I just kind of popped out as little as I could to not show anything and got off stage and changed my pants cover. And the next day, a kid in my class said, hey, my little brother said, when he saw the show, you came out of the box. And then he said, it smelled like piss when you came out of the box. I was like, I don't know what he's talking about. He said, he said you had a big dark stain. But no. I had torn my pants. My mom sewed a patch on it. I don't know what. That's probably
I'm cringe. I mean, I'm so glad this is on radio because I'm absolutely cringing over here because I'm just sitting here that would scar me emotionally. I'd be Glenn Close and I'd just be clicking a light on and off. Meow 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 meow. Take me to my happy place. Meow meow meow. You wet your pants while in a cardboard box in
that
front
I
of
had
your
to pop out
sixth
of.
Grade class, dressed as Groucho
just
Marx.
Just as Groucho Marx. This is my life. Welcome to it.
It reminds me, and I'll make this very brief because we're getting close to the end of the show. But
and you have something to ask me about.
I do indeed. Case of Libel. Have you ever seen it? Heavy duty courtroom drama. Have you ever seen it? You know of it. Yeah. Case of Libel.
Case of Libel?
Yeah.
No.
Very serious.
Absence of malice,
drama.
I know, but I don't know Case of Libel.
Being done out here at a big theater, and friends of mine were in the cast, and I wanted to hang out at the theater one night, and they said, okay, yeah, come. Actually, there's something you can do for us, too. There's a lighting change that we need, and our stage manager actually has to leave for 15 minutes during the show. Right? And this is at the Morgan Wixler Theater in Santa Monica.
Uh-huh.
Nice house. And I said, well, I can handle that. You show me what to do. So I got there a little early. They showed me the thing, the lever to push for that lighting cue, which was to be the next day in the courtroom. And that moment came. And my friend said, who was one of the stars, I will give you a signal just as the lights, you know, go down from the previous view, when to come up with the light. So I'm waiting off stage, and I think I see the hand going like this. So I turn the lights on, and everybody on the stage had their asses facing the audience, and they were all getting dressed in the clothes for the next day.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a quick change, but nobody told me that.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And
12 angry butts.
Well,
yes.
Angry butts.
That's my favorite. there were 11, and then Scott peeing.
Exactly.
But, that's funny.
But speaking of theater and good theater at that, Paul, you should be very proud of Seaglass Theaters of Grapes and Nuts.
Absolutely delighted.
And the extraordionary reviews you've been getting. You personally as director and the cast and the show. And
we've gotten 5 reviews, and we're just astounded. With 5 reviews and not one knockwood a million times. But not a negative word in any of them. Variety, LA Weekly, Backstage, Broadway World, everything has been just a rave, and the people who are attending are just really loving it. The audience.
Well, it should be. And everybody should go see this show, ladies and gentlemen. And it's easy to do. You simply go to Seaglass Theater, that's R-E at the end of theater, seaglasstheater.org.
Scott, did you see it in Chicago?
Purchase your tickets.
I never got to see it in Chicago, so that's why I can't wait to open my show so I can get over and see you guys.
You'll really enjoy it.
I can't wait.
Friday, Saturday evenings at 8 p.m., Sunday at 4 o'clock.
And the nice thing is that people, obviously, if you're familiar with The Grapes of Wrath and Of Mice and Men, you'll get infinitely more out of it because, you know, there's the parody source material. But even the people who aren't really Steinbeck, you know, scholars are really just doubled over with laughter. It's really going well. We're just very lucky.
Well, Ted, thank you. Ted.
That's all right.
It
happens.
Thank you. No, I'm looking at your bio. Thank you so much for joining us. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, Blythe Spirit at A Noise Within begins previews October 2nd, opens October 9th through December 17th. And go and see this remarkable young actor in this lovely play by Noel Coward.
And as far as I know, the Noel Coward version is not the one where the character pees on stage.
No. I don't think so.
Okay, good.
No, but that's what we're doing, the Joel Coward version.
So
anything's allowed.
And we thank you again, Scott. And also, ladies and gentlemen, please join us next week for a conversation with iconic television, motion picture, and theater star Mr. Richard Chamberlain and a phenomenal singer by the name of Rosalind Kind, who has an older sister who also sings, who happens to be Barbara Streisand.
And she is?
Yes, exactly.
We'll see you all next week. Thank you so much.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.